to Piercing the Veil on bbsradio.com with your hosts Jordan and Corey and new guests appearing weekly. During the show, Jordan and Corey will pierce the many veils of illusion to reveal the universal truths and tools for negotiation inherent to success in one's daily life, including but not limited to 1. Multidimensional wordsmithing. 2. Mastering and commanding negotiations. 3. Constructive trust and wealth preservation. And 4. Spirituality. Pierce the veil, and the truth will reveal itself.
Plug in some greetings. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. It's Sunday, the 24th. Today, we have a special guest online. His name is Aaron Goines. He's a great friend of mine, a client, and a student. And he's going to be talking about colloidal silver. I also have Corey with me here today. He's calling in from the phone. He had some Skype issues. What we're going to do for this episode or the show, we're going to start off by talking about a few tactics or techniques, if you will, to respond to presentments. And this is just something that I'm setting up for our next week's show. We're going to have a forum-style show where me and Corey discuss, like we did on our first show, a few contracting principles that can save everybody a lot of time and stress in dealing with their everyday life. So the first technique I want to talk about is a simple return. I'm sure every single one of you has gotten a piece of mail that you didn't like, whether that be a student loan or a credit card bill or some sort of collection letter or some sort of solicitation. I know it's real easy for you to just rip that up and throw it in the trash. However, you could be throwing away money. And what I mean by that is if you are able to request a validation from a credit card by chance and they fail to validate and they still send you those solicitations that you're getting in the mail every day, that's something that's a violation of consumer law, and you can actually call them on it and get money in court. In other situations, you can just settle that outside of court if necessary. Now, when you talk about court documents, and Corey, this is something that you and I have both dealt with extensively ourselves. When you do get like a traffic ticket, you know, say for example, and you're going along, you're dealing with it, or, you know, whatever the case may be, and you get that letter, that letterhead from the court, it's almost like it's got a little bit of like black voodoo or magic on it, right? You could feel the energy off of it. Your stomach kind of sinks. I'm speaking from personal experience back in the day. And there's a better way to handle it than just being in that energy and going, oh my God, what do I do? You know, this and that. So the simple return is, if it's the first contact, so this is the first credit card solicitation or the first court notice that you have for your ticket or something, if it's the first thing, you definitely want to open it. Don't ignore it. Don't throw it away. Okay. You want to open it up and see what they're saying. What is their offer? What are they telling you? Right. And even if it says in that language of that offer, you are required to do this, you've got to show up at this time, you need to do that and this and that and pay us this and all these different types of things, which might seem like an order to you, they're still asking for your performance. And the way you choose to perform is going to dictate what your results are, whether you're playing by their terms or by yours. So that court document, for instance, if it says you've got to appear on this time, it's not very well known at all, and the attorneys don't know this because they have to play by their rules. But you can take that and you can just write your own terms on there. Well, no, I'd like to show up on April 21st, and I'm going to show up in a private capacity, and my time and my body are not going to be collateral for this. I'm not going to pay you any money. I might give you some sort of alternate performance, like show up with a letter of community service, a couple hours, something like that, and then I'm done with this case. You can do that. I've done that. It's been successful in the past. Or, say, for example, like I mentioned the credit card thing, you can write on their document and send it back to them. Now, does it cost you a little bit of money? Yeah, but it's negligible because you're investing $5, $10 to return their documents back to them, and you have a record that you're not in agreement with what they're asking from you. So maybe you've got a $5,000 student loan that you can't pay or a credit card, and they're constantly bugging you. You have the right to validation, okay? So the techniques that I've been using are the return, which is what I'm talking to you about, the unqualified return where you just send it back, There's the qualified return where you write your terms on it, okay, and you send it back to them. There's what's called the cross-out and counter stipulations, which takes it to the next level. That's something we'll be getting into in our next week's show. All right. This is why I'm discussing it with you listeners. And then there's a few other things that are for our more advanced level people. And we happen to have one of those guys on the show today. His name's Aaron and Benjamin Coins, and he's a research scientist, a tiny home advocate. His wife and him live in a small home and have actually engaged my services before to help them with that. And Corey, if you will, just go ahead and introduce him, and we'll get him on the line.
Well, welcome, Aaron. Aaron is going to talk a little bit about his involvement in colloidal silver. We know that some of us know that colloidal silver is a great alternative for maintaining our health. It tends to safely destroy bacteria and viruses and such within our body. And Aaron's going to talk a little bit about his involvement with that, and I believe some products that he has to offer. And yes, he also happens to be one of Jordan's students. And I have witnessed some of him in action in the courtroom, and from what I understand, in his second appearance in court, and he seemed to have handled it quite well. So let's move into that. Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have you on the show, brother.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Yes. So I know exactly what you do because we've been hanging out for a while, but if you could tell some of our listeners what you're really about, what you've been getting into lately, more about the colloidal silver, and then we kind of get into the show a little bit later. We'll talk about some of our experience together as my client and my student.
Well, what I'm really about is I'm a biomedical scientist, and I'm really about helping people with their health. And it's just the way things have worked out in this world. In order to do that, you also have to learn the law and how to defend yourself legally in order even to have health in this country, because there's a lot of forces who want you to be sick. I'm about helping people ultimately. And so the ways that I've chose to do that is just show lead by example. We live in a tiny home, and I started a health supplement company. And so that's the way I help people, just through education with health supplements. And the highest quality health supplements available. And I think the number one health supplement, if you don't get any other one in the whole world, you need your colloidal silver.
Wow. And talk about it a little bit, if you will, the health supplement game, you know, the hoops that you've had to jump through so far in building your company and trying to help people with this type of stuff.
Well, the important thing to know, I studied science and, you know, I went to school more than 10 years in order to learn how to cure cancer. That's what I wanted to do. Later in life, I found out that it's actually illegal in this country to cure cancer, unless you're a drug. And I realized, hey, I'm not a drug, so it's illegal for me as a scientist to cure cancer. So the game in this country is drugs. And there's a big pharmaceutical conglomerate, and they have gazillions and billions of dollars, and they want to make drugs, create drugs, and push drugs on people, whether that's the best thing for the person or not. So through that, I've discovered the way to get around that system and actually still help people is through health supplements. And there's a very big legal distinction between a drug and a health supplement. And literally, they require you to put some voodoo on your bottles, you know, specifically state it's not a drug and stuff like that. And you basically have to lie, and you have to put a FDA disclaimer on there that the product is not intended to diagnose, cure, prevent, treat, or anything. Basically, you have to put a curse on your bottle. In order
even
to sell
if that's
it.
Been your results, it sounds like you've had to do a little bit of wordsmithing there to kind of negotiate your way through that.
So I found out how to do it, and basically you just have to give people the disclaimers first. And so basically with a health supplement, with law, it's as you know, it's intention. So it's basically, it is not the intention of my company to sell this to you as a drug. It's just, I'm just selling you this as a health supplement. And then FDA disclaimer, not intended to do anything, basically. But the thing is, when you it can be your intention when you buy a product, not the company that sold it to you's intention, but your personal intention to use that product in a way to help yourself. And when you do that, that is self-medication. And when you're self-medicating, you're legally responsible for what you put in your mouth. And so it basically comes down to responsibility. So then there's a learning curve for that.
Transfer of responsibility and duties, and you've got notice and disclaimer. So you're utilizing contracting principles. And this is a big point that I make in my show. I always bring it back to this. It's always about negotiation. Everywhere in your life, it will show up if you can just identify how you're doing it now and find a better way. And it seems like, Ben, you found a better way because you seem to be real successful with this colloidal silver thing. And it's something that I've used in the past extensively. I swear by it myself personally. So what exactly makes your silver special compared to all the other ones out there? Because, you know, you see it like Sprouts and even Walmart nowadays, they have their own versions. And, you know, I would be cautious just myself. Going through a big box store as opposed to somebody who's really done their research. So could you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, my colloidal silver is very different than what you'll find in the store. What you're going to find in the store is either clear. You can look at the quality of the silver by the color of it generally. If it's clear, it's just silver ions. It's not actually colloidal silver. If it looks cloudy white, which is what the better stuff in the store is, that's actually a lower quality colloidal silver. It's not a food grade colloidal silver. And if you take enough of that, you can turn yourself blue. It's a negative cosmetic effect. And my colloidal silver is actually high quality food grade 10 nanometer colloidal silver. It actually refracts the light according to Rayleigh scattering. So it doesn't look cloudy white. It actually has an amber color to it. And also it has a special proprietary coating on it that makes it safe for internal ingestion as well. So okay. I would say all colloidal silvers are good topically, but if you're going to be taking a lot of it internally, my colloidal silver is just so far beyond the other colloidal silvers out there. So mine is actually made to take internally, but all of them are good topically. I tell you what, you can do a lot with them topically, any of them.
Okay. And hey, we're still getting a little noise on the mic. I don't know if that's you or Corey maybe, but I did also want to ask, what exactly, for our listeners' benefit, what's the difference between an ion and a colloid when you're dealing with colloidal silver?
Well, it has to do with dosing. It's really the silver ion that is known to kill stuff, okay? Colloidal silver kills bacteria, viruses, and fungi in vitro. That means in the lab test, if you put it on any of those things, it kills them. And it is actually the silver ion that kills them, but it has to do with dosing. The colloid is larger. It's very small. It's still nanometer, but it's larger than just the silver ion is just a single atom. Okay. Colloid is like bigger. Okay. It might be like 2,000 atoms stuck together or something. So it's like a bigger ball of silver, but it's tiny. It's a tiny ball of silver compared to an atom, but it's bigger compared to an atom. And that slowly releases the silver ions. So it properly doses the silver correctly. In a nutshell, why the colloidal silver is better. Because the bigger pieces of silver, if they're larger than about 35 nanometers, and the homemade cloudy white stuff is about 100 nanometers, that's the stuff that is too big. It'll get stuck in your body, turn you blue. So you want less than 35 nanometers, and about 10 to 30 nanometers is safe for internal ingestion, if it's coated especially. And then a colloid of that size then slowly releases the silver ions, which actually kill stuff. If you just buy the clear stuff in the store, that's just the silver ions. That's like an overdose if you drink that. But for topical, it's fine.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Corey, Aaron, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I got a question. Aaron, can you describe the mechanics of what goes on, of the actual interaction between the silver particles or the silver ions and how they actually interact with the microbes? Like how what's the mechanics of how the silver destroys the microbes, if you would?
Sure thing. I'll tell you what's known. And like I said, they know that the silver, there's lots of research studies out there that show that silver and silver ions, they will kill bacteria, viruses, and even in fungi as well. Now, of those three things, the only one that's really known how it does it is for the bacteria. Both the gram-negative and gram-positive bacteria, all the bacterias, it's known that the silver will actually destroy the bacterial cell wall, and that's how it's killing the bacteria. Now, for the viruses and the fungi, it's less well known. There are definitely some other pathways in the body. They've shown that the silver has some anti-inflammatory properties and that the silver is somehow involved with boosting the immune system. And so I can't really explain how it kills the viruses and the fungi as well, but it does work. And I'll tell you for a fact, it really does kill fungi as well. We did. You can experiment yourself and find out. It's really we eat a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in our tiny home. And if you don't refrigerate the jelly, in about 2 weeks, it'll grow fungus on top of the jelly, mold, you know. I put a drop of the colloidal silver in the cap, and it was 3 months, never grew any fungus. So, I mean, it really is antifungal. You know, people are using it for toad fungus.
Up the fungus because Roman soldiers actually used to carry silver coins in their milk and with their bread, and it would keep it from molding. And so they'd also put it in their water carriers as well. So these guys were traveling, you know, conquering and pillaging from country to country, sometimes months on end, and all their food stores and their drink stores would be lasting longer than anybody else, which gave them an advantage.
Right.
That's super cool.
Yeah, my understanding is that one of the main reasons why the various aristocracies over time, probably as far back as Rome, why they used silver eating utensils.
Silver spoon in your mouth. Reasons.
Silver spoon in your mouth. And likewise, silver is used in all kinds of medical applications for surgical tools, surgical implements, and so forth. So mainstream is really up on the antimicrobial properties of silver. I think that's been knowledge amongst some folks for quite some time now, a few thousand years, perhaps.
That's right, absolutely. And okay, guys, so we're going to go to a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more. Me and Corey will talk with Ben about some of the different things that he's done in the lab, some of his tests and his experiences with the silver. Also, we'll get a little bit into his experiences as my student with some of these things that we started the show off describing. I really want to keep touching on this because next week we're going to have a really, really in-depth show about this. These things really do work as long as you're putting your energy and your intent honorably behind them. Okay, so we're going to jump to commercial break and we'll see you when we get back.
Having trouble with harassing collection agencies? Creditors breathing down your neck? Feeling like you're drowning in debt? The Guild of Tactical Wordsmiths is here to help you now. GTAC is an ecclesiastical guild association of aggressive debt assassins who can eliminate your debts, free negative marks from your credit report, and get you compensated for unfair collection practices or emotional damages. They have a proven track record of success and sustainable results, which will have creditors and debt collectors shaking in their boots. This is not your typical credit repair or verification. GTAC uses proven techniques and negotiation tactics to completely eliminate your debt or conflict, remove negative marks from your credit reports, and in most cases, GTAC will retrieve compensation for you. Call for your free 15-minute consultation today at 214-290-3053.
All right, we're back here. Ben, welcome back. Corey, thank you very much for being here today. For listeners that are just joining us, if that may be the case, we started off today's show giving a little advanced notice. Next week's show is going to go into detail about some of our wordsmithing, tactical wordsmithing techniques, getting down and dirty into the real nitty-gritty parts of what we've done, what we're doing, and where we're going. But for right now, we've got on the show Benjamin Goines, and he's a research scientist and a tiny home advocate and a great friend of mine who's also my client. He's been talking about colloidal silver, and we're going to go ahead and throw it back to Corey because Corey had a line of questioning that was very interesting.
Yeah, I was, and obviously you probably know more about this than I do, but I was under the impression, you mentioned the efficacy of colloidal silver in terms of destroying bacteria, pretty commonly known as to how the mechanisms of that, maybe less so with the viruses and the fungi. I was under the impression that it had something to do with how the particles of silver were charged electrically, as opposed to the outside or the cell wall of the bacteria. My understanding was that the silver is negatively charged, if I'm not mistaken, and that the bacterial wall is positively charged, and that the bacteria attracts the silver particles, and then when they come in contact with each other, that something occurs where the actual silver particle destroys the cell wall, breaches the cell wall of the bacteria, and basically spilling it out and destroying it. Does that resonate at all, or am I off?
That's close. You have the charges flipped around. The silver's ions are positive, and usually a membrane around a cell, if it was a gram-negative bacteria, would be negatively charged. So what you said is correct. Just swap the charges around, and then be aware there's two types of bacteria. There's a gram-positive bacteria, which there's a gram-stain. They just have these carbohydrates and stuff on the outside, and then there's a gram-negative bacteria that have like a cell membrane, which the ones you're talking about. But the silver actually kills both of them. It doesn't matter which one, whether they what kind of cell wall they have, it takes them out. Also, the silver will combine with sulfate groups and cysteines, and you can get really complicated with the biochemistry. I don't want to get into that, but it is very well known how the silver will take out the cell walls and spew out the guts, just like you said, of bacteria, both gram-negative and gram-positive. Yes.
Right. It's very interesting, you guys, the language that I hear you use, and how everything really comes back down to energy, magnetism, you know, these different types of conscious forces. What you're describing is, you know, like a reaction and an anti-reaction and, you know, all these different types of things that are happening on a very basic level. And it involves electricity. The body is bioelectric. The consciousness is bioelectric. You know, that's the vehicle operating out of. And that really ties into a lot of your come from, you know, when we're doing our other techniques in the real world. What is your come from? What is your energy? And Ben, you've actually experienced this before because... You went into court for the very first time in your life and had one experience that I guess we could deem it negative, you know, since we're talking polarities. And the second time after a little bit of coaching and some, you know, some energy shifting, you went in and had a pretty positive experience. So can you talk a little bit about that? I'm just going to segue into that.
Well, I would say that, yeah, unfortunately every experience in court is negative, but definitely the second time was a lot better. And I can definitely tell now that they're kind of afraid of me when I go in court, and they just want to get rid of me as fast as possible because they don't like it when you go in there and they can tell you know what we're about. And the second time I went in there, they didn't want to have anything to do with me. I just said, hey, liability's on you guys. I'm walking out of here, and that's what I did. And I was thinking they'd come chasing after me. If they didn't, it worked. So
see you. It's counterintuitive.
What was your appearance about? What were the charges or what have you that you were dealing with, if you don't mind referring to them?
Well, they were fraudulent charges, but they gave me a parking in my own grass, not having a building permit for my tiny home. They just bundled a whole bunch of stuff together, and they were completely all quasi-criminal, none of them actually valid. And so they couldn't even read the charges correctly. It was very interesting.
You had him stumbling, stammering.
But ultimately, we didn't really go into what the charges were because I paid him or charged him off with Jordan's help, and I didn't even get into what the charges were about. And
you gave him something of value and shipped the liability back to them to settle the accounts without your time and your body.
Exactly.
Cool.
My business is done here. I remember we have video of that. We have video of that. I had the good fortune of working on the video segments on behalf of Jordan and Benjamin. And man, it was great. I saw the difference between the first interaction and the second interaction. And at the end of the second interaction, it was like Ben did his thing, dropped the mic on the ground, and walked out. And as far as I know, you haven't heard anything about it since. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, I have a bad neighbor who's always trying to sick the police on me for fraudulent reasons, and I've got some more interesting video of that. But now the cops completely leave me alone. I put a solar bed in my yard. I don't have the city coming out there and harassing me about, hey, you got furniture, yard, anything. They just completely leave me alone. They don't want anything to do with me. They only come and bother me when my annoying neighbor makes them, forces them to, and then they're very respectful. They don't step on my property. I've got it properly noticed, no trespassing. And you can just tell that they're afraid of me, and they just stay away from me, essentially. Not afraid of me in a you know, violent way, but afraid of me in a legal way. Like they do not want to step on my property, and I don't even have a fence up. I've got like a one rock high fence, and they will not step on my property.
That's a big thing today is the legal liabilities and understanding the techniques necessary to shift those back onto the people that are bringing them onto you. Like I said, whether it's a credit card bill or a traffic ticket or, you know, some sort of other presentment, you always have the right to send it back, renegotiate, establish your own terms, all of these things, which you have done, right? And you're just living it up. You're being successful at it. So I would definitely say it's all about money. Corey knows this too. It's all coming back down to money. It's maximizing the profits and reducing the risk game. That's probably why you're experiencing what you are experiencing. And I would say this, Ben, I look at it like this. You're getting a chance almost every single day to exercise your skills and learn and grow and become a better tactical wordsmith and a better tiny home advocate and better able to, you know, espouse your beliefs and at the same time protect them.
Well, I also want to mention that I know y'all really are into the tiny home thing, but Jordan has helped me immensely with my student loans. I can't even tell you how amazing that's been. I don't know if you're interested in talking about that, Jordan, but I mean, it's just unbelievable what Jordan has done to help me with that. I mean, it's just such a racket and a scam the way the money system works in this country. It's really, I believe it's so important for people to get financially literate and legally literate to go with that, because there's no way without it.
Yeah, it is a big scam, and you really are. It shows how on the same page we are. That's where I was going next. I wanted to give our listeners sort of an example of what we've done and employed and executed, shall we say, regards to return techniques, crossing out, counter stipulations, renegotiations, because we've done a whole range of those, from simply returning it unopened to opening the document itself, looking at it, and actually going through line by line and giving them a counter, you know, rebuttal line by line. We've done that one. Do you remember all those things?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. What we did is we got a notice of hearing, right? And we sent it back to them with our offer. And then we also got a third party, the guy that actually brought the ordinance violations, I guess they were, against Ben, he actually communicated with us during our process. And so we assessed and analyzed that and said, okay, what can we do here? So we took his and we actually went line by line and counteroffered and did that. And at that point, we didn't hear anything for like another week or so. And then they sent us a reoffer, which was basically the exact same letter they had sent before. So we analyzed it and we said, well, that's not really a response. They didn't give any substantial change or difference to what we've said before, so it doesn't make sense to go line by line and do all this extra work. So we basically just stood out and said, we're returning this to you for defect, and please refer to our previous notices, thereby reincorporating what we had already done. You see,
that
this
was
like a
that big, was so great. Let me just comment on that. I remember they sent me something saying, oh, we're going to charge you $1,000 a day if you don't move your tiny home. And basically, I crossed it out and sent him back, well, I'm going to charge you $5,000 a day. And then I never heard back from him on that again. So I'm telling you, that cross out and renegotiate. And if they want to offer to charge me $1,000 a day, just cross out, and I offered to charge them $5,000 a day. And then they left me alone on that one.
That's right. You know, and you have to put other things in there, like, okay, this is how I'm going to enforce it. You're waiving your rights and immunities to any protections from the court system if I have to go sue you, so that you can't motion to dismiss based on immunity. All these types of things we did include as well. It is pretty hilarious when you receive a threat from these types of companies and you cross it out and renegotiate and make them liable, they just go silent. It's pretty funny. And it just shows how easy it is to renegotiate everything.
Contracts are fluid and dynamic.
That's right. That's right. So I really appreciate you coming on and talking about some of this stuff, because I think the listeners will get a better understanding by listening to somebody who's gone through it. You know, with me teaching it, it's very difficult for me sometimes, because I can teach the form, right? And I can even teach the substance behind the form. But the application of it has to be your own. You must own it. You can't rely on a piece of paper. And that's what you've done successfully so far, Ben. So can you maybe explain, like, what you've had to go through, the shift you've had to take from when you very first started and you've never been or set foot in a courtroom before to where you are now? Because I do believe that a lot of people are affected by these things. We keep coming back to this topic, the court thing, but it touches everybody's life in some way or another. So just go ahead and, if you will, just describe some of the shifts that you've taken personally since we started.
I think the hardest thing when I started was, I mean, I always felt that I had a right to contract, and I always felt like everybody was just shoving contracts down your throat, you know, these unilateral contracts, you know, take this, you must do this, just threats and stuff. And it's really empowering once you really get the proof and you do it and try it. I'm experimented, so I, you know, try to see if it worked, and it really does work. It really is true. You really can contract with these people. You can cross it out and send it back to them and renegotiate. And once you realize it's very powerful, once you realize and own up to the fact that you can actually make contracts and you don't have to accept their contracts. And then that's just the hardest thing to get around, because people aren't used to that. You know, we're raised to be sheeple and just take, you know, if someone sends you something in the mail saying you owe me $100 or else, you know, most people just probably pay it and they don't even try. So I think that's the hardest part, is just believing that you have the ability to contract and then doing it and then seeing that it works. And then once you get that justification, then you're not afraid anymore. And then, you know, getting over the fear of, you know, what are they going to do to me? Because they make some pretty nasty threats, like, oh, we're going to, you know, I don't know, lock you up forever and, you know, throw away the key.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because the first time you went to court, you got arrested for contempt because you kept talking and kept trying to make your point. And he kind of got fed up and just put you in there. But it highlights the fact that everything is renegotiable at any time for any reason, because as I understand it and I remember it, they were going to put you in there for a couple months for a contempt charge, and you were out in less than 8 hours with no charges whatsoever.
Yeah, that's correct.
they dropped it. So, and it was because of the behavior that you displayed inside after they had taken you, handcuffed you, put you in a box, and you were recontracting with everything they said. Can you describe a little bit about that? I want our listeners to hear that experience.
Yeah, the whole time that it was a false arrest. Basically, I was thrown in jail under one-time contempt. One time it was under fraudulent warrants. There's a father and son judge in my town, and the son judge forged his father's signature, and it was completely defective warrants. But the whole time you're in there, they're trying to make you offers. And what the main offer they keep trying to get you to bond out is the main offer, and they try and they try and they try so hard. And the first time it happened, I was stupid and I did it. The second time I didn't do it, and it was much better. So, I mean, the thing is, you just have to be aware. And the whole time I'm in there, you know, I'm noticing them. You know, every communication that I have with them, I was noticing them that I'm not okay with being here. I didn't agree to be here. You guys are going to be liable for having me here. And that kind of thing. And if they told me to do something, I would say, I'm going to go do that. I would maintain my own jurisdiction the whole time I was there. One time they offered, like, oh, you have to remember we're taking all your property away from you, and you have to remember what the number of the locker is or something. And I was like, if you take my property, it better be there when I get out of here, because you're liable for that. I recontracted with them.
They dropped it.
You know, yeah. They're like, you know, we're gonna keep you in here a month. I was like, how about you let me out right now? You know, just the whole
Corey,
time. I mean, it was stressful.
Corey had a similar experience to you, Ben. Corey, do you want to talk a little bit about that? How you were able to renegotiate your way out, just using, you know, while you were in front of the judge, using the language?
Yeah, it all started with a speeding ticket that I had received a while ago, and I could have just as easily paid off that speeding ticket with Federal Reserve notes, right? No problem. It wasn't that much money. I could have handled it just the way that I would advise anyone to handle their presentments by some corporation or law enforcement or something like that, if you're not knowledgeable about other ways to go about it. If you get a bill, you know, they're asking you for some money. If you don't know what you're doing, just pay it. Don't ignore it, like Jordan said in the beginning. You know? So I could have easily just paid it. However, I saw it as an opportunity to be able to apply some of the other knowledge that I had or that I was learning. And so I let it slide for a while. And then inevitably, fees and fines add up, and then there's a notice to appear or a warrant for arrest if you don't answer their presentments, and so on and so forth. And so I let it kind of build up a little bit because I figured it would be worth having the experience. I know it seems kind of crazy because you really don't want to go into court if you don't need to. You definitely don't want to go into a box for any reason if you can avoid it. So, long story short, I was on the road, and one of my headlights happened to have been out in the car that I was driving, and I got pulled over by highway patrol, and it came up that I had a warrant for my arrest for this incident that occurred quite some time before. And it was interesting, and I don't even think I've described this to you, Jordan, in talking about it. The guy came up to the car after he had pulled me over. He went back to his cruiser and I guess checked my information on the computer. And when he came back to the vehicle, he was kind of nervous. And he was, he said, basically, you got to come with me. You're under arrest, so on and so forth. And he went to open the door, and he paused. He was waiting for me to respond in some kind of way. You know, I've been in situations where they rip open the door and they tear you out of the car and throw you down on the ground. In this particular instance, he went to grab the door and pull it open, but he was kind of hesitant as if he was waiting for me to respond some kind of way. He didn't, it wasn't the full on, rip the door open, rip you out of the car. It was as if he was waiting for me to respond in a way that showed that he was questionable about his own authority in the moment. And so
it's funny you mentioned that. Just as a background for the listeners, Corey and I and a couple other people, we've done this process to get ourselves presumably onto a do not detain list, which is listed nationwide. And this process has to be done honorably. You have to have good intent. It doesn't mean you can run around and go hurt people and, maim people and destroy the property and do whatever you want. They're going to snatch you up if you do that. But for little things like traffic tickets and traffic ticket warrants and all these types of things, they're supposed to not detain you, not stop you, not question you. And it's interesting, I didn't know this aspect of the story until now. That really makes a lot of sense that you say he paused, because the police nowadays, when they run your plates, they can see everything about you, all about your registration, your Facebook profile. They can go anywhere. They can request electronically the last text messages from the last day of your phone. All of these things are very, very intrusive, but they know exactly what's happening before they walk up to the car most of the time. Some of these departments might not have these technologies, but some of them do. So it's interesting that he paused.
He did pause. And of course, I don't think I have as much experience as you do with law enforcement. I was nervous, I would have to say, just like people, you know, when you deal with the authorities, anything could happen. Just like when you're in a courtroom situation, you know, I know people who are real fluent in the court, and, you know, it's like stage fright. You know, I know music performers who still get butterflies and stage fright before they go on stage. But I made a mental note that the guy was hesitant. Not only was he hesitant, he grabbed the door, pulled the handle, opened it, and then closed it again. And it was like, he was like, open and close it rapidly in a very short amount of time. And I noticed, I was like, this guy is like really hesitant in dealing with me. What's up with that? I come to find out eventually, I acquiesced. I get out of the vehicle. They cuffed me. They put me in the vehicle, and I'm able to
I'm going to stop you right there. We got to go to commercial, but that's exactly where I wanted to break, so that when we get back, our listeners can hear exactly what you saw for yourself with your own two eyes on that little laptop screen. Okay.
Yeah.
So we're going to go to commercial. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Piercing the Veil on BBSRadio.com with your hosts Jordan and Corey, and new guests appearing weekly. During the show, Jordan and Corey will pierce the many veils of illusion to reveal the universal truths and tools for negotiation inherent to success in one's daily life, including but not limited to 1. Multidimensional wordsmithing, 2. Mastering and commanding negotiations, 3. Constructive trusts and wealth preservation, and 4. Spirituality. Pierce the veil, and the truth will reveal itself.
All right, everyone, welcome back. Thank you very much for being with us today. Corey, you were right in the middle of a hair-raising story. You just got put into the back of a squad car on warrants for traffic tickets, and you had done a process previously that supposedly had put you on a do not detain list, and now you're in the back of the car, and what do you see?
I'm in the back seat of the cruiser, and there were other officers who arrived on the scene. I want to just segue a little bit. While I was on the road, on the side of the road, before they put me into the vehicle, one of the backup officers actually asked me, "Are you one of those sovereign citizens?" And I said, "What's that?" And he kind of looked at me, you know, I was like, that sounds like a contradiction, like an oxymoron to me. And he kind of looked at me, and kind of funny, and then I didn't say anything else. And so, where we left off, I was in the back of the cruiser, and I pushed my head, my face up against the barrier, because I was trying to make out what information was on the computer screen that the officer was accessing. And lo and behold, in front of my very eyes, I saw "do not detain." So on the computer screen in the highway patrol vehicle was information about me, and among other things, it said "do not detain." So I was somewhat reassured at having heard of this mythological "do not detain" list that some people have had experience with. This was my first experience with it. And lo and behold, some of the processes and things that Jordan and I had done on behalf of myself apparently hit the mark and did what they were intended to do. Now, my understanding of the do not detain list is as follows. There are three different levels. The first level is, and I suspect that because I had outstanding debts to them, I had outstanding obligations that I did not satisfy with them. My understanding is that on the lower level of the do not detain list, at the local level, it's up to the discretion of a judge whether or not that do not detain list actually applies.
Well, it's funny you say that. What they're doing is you have to prove yourself that you're competent in all levels and areas of law and commerce.
Right.
As every man and every woman is, we talked about this on our very first show, is presumed to know how to operate because they're walking around in the public every day. If you didn't know how to operate, you'd be inside learning how to operate, and then you go out when you're ready. Well, since you're out there, they're presuming you're ready. So that really puts the burden on you to not just think that they're not going to take you in, and be ready to take your time and your energy to settle the matter, right?
Right,
and so
right.
we'll get a little bit more into what happened after that, because it's real interesting and it ties in very well with our next show. We'll get into that next week. I just wanted you to share a little bit of your story because I wanted to highlight the fact that everything is always negotiable. Ben's story is extremely similar, you know, with what he employed and the techniques he used to get himself out and then deal with the situation. And now look at them. They don't want to touch him. He's a porcupine, right? They don't want to mess with him. And these are things that our listeners can learn how to do. We're going to be doing blogs. We're going to be doing newsletters. We're going to have a YouTube series where we can walk you through these types of things. And this is not for anybody to run around and start using these willy-nilly and abusing them because it represents my life's work, basically, and a collaboration of very highly skilled other people's works that I've hybridized, okay, and sort of conglomerated into this hybrid fluid version of, you know, real-time things. I don't want it to be shut down. I want people to be working in harmony with these different types of situations to come to a resolution for all parties. Okay. So that's what we need to do on a whole scale in our lives. And whether it's health, like colloidal silver, which Ben is just rocking that, you know, that sector, or whether it's the law, like you and I are experienced in, or whether it's just your everyday life, you need to be the master of it. Okay? You need to be the master of it and know that you can negotiate it and contract at any time for any reason with anyone or thing. So, Ben, you've been awesome, and I appreciate you being on the show. And Corey, thank you for your perspective on everything. I think that we had a really good mix of, you know, a little bit of health supplements, a little bit of our guest here, and then also bringing back our central theme of our show, which is contracting, negotiations, resolving debts, resolving situations. And I got to tell you, both of you guys are extremely experienced. I really appreciate your energy and time and devotion that we've been working on together for, you know, years now.
Thank you, Jordan. Thank you.
You're welcome. Ben, real quick, we've got a few minutes left. Do you want to go ahead and plug your service, man? That's why we have you on here. You make the colloidal silver game look real good. So tell people how they can get in contact with you. Do you have a website or anything like that?
Yeah, I have a website. It's newsilver.com, NEUSILVER, not NEWNEU, newsilver.com. And you can call me at 832-919-NEUS. And that goes to my Google Voice, and I'll pick up and answer any questions you have. But I want you to also know I have a line of health supplements. So colloidal silver is the first one you need. After that, I have an iodine health supplement, and just recently I have a colloidal gold health supplement as well. And what do all three of these health supplements I have in common? You were talking about electrics and bioelectrics, and they are all bioelectric, highly bioelectric, and amazing for your body. So please contact me. If you only get one health supplement, you need the silver, but then don't stop there. Talk to me about other health supplements and how I can help you. Really, I can revolutionize your health. I really can.
Can you rerun those numbers in that website for our listeners?
Yeah, the website is newsilver, NEUSILVER.com. And you can call me at 832-919-NEUS.
Wonderful. And Ben, I just wanted to ask your permission while we're on the air here. When we do our YouTube series, we do our blogs, we do our things like that, we may want to incorporate some sort of media and some examples for, you know, the viewers or the whatever the case may be, the learners or the potential wordsmiths, would you be willing to display at least a portion or perhaps the whole video of your second time in court?
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I have about 7 YouTube videos on colloidal silver as well. You can connect with me at my Facebook page. It's iMedDo, I-M-E-D-D-O is my company name. You can connect on my Facebook page, and you can watch those videos as well. I'll have them up on my website soon, but they're kind of hard to find. But if you just Google, you know, new silver, you'll probably see some of my videos popping up. And I go into detail with some more videos on the colloidal silver as well.
Wonderful.
Yeah, excellent. Okay. Yeah, I personally, just to validate the colloidal silver experience, I've been using it off and on for about 15 years. I don't typically get sick, but I, a couple of years ago, had a really bad, some kind of stomach virus or something that just really knocked me out for about a week. And I tried all kinds of different things, and I finally got around to the silver. And, the colloidal silver, something that I had been using for quite some time. And it knocked it out. The next day, I was done.
Well, you know, the reason colloidal silver is amazing is because it can save your life. If you get in the hospital and you get a multiple drug-resistant bacteria, your IV line gets infected with some fungus, it can literally save your life. If you get some rare exotic disease. So for the older people, they understand colloidal silver is a must-have because it can literally save your life. But for younger people with pretty good health, it makes an amazing travel item. My wife and I, we just went to the Mayan Riviera in Mexico, and we drank all the water there. We put a little silver in it and purified it. I even drank the cave water. The Holy Mayan cenote water, and there was bat guano and fish guano in there. Put a couple drops of silver in there, gave it a little time, and drank it, no problem. And so for young people, I really like the silver as an amazing travel item. I wouldn't leave this country without it, wherever you go.
Definitely. Yeah, I've had similar experience with that. I also like your iodine as well. The iodine that you had was just wonderful. I've never had anything like it. I actually had a huge, I forget what it is, a Herkimer reaction, something like that. It's where the detox process happens so fast your body can't clear it out, and so you get like a huge rash on your leg or your hand or your face or your neck or whatever metals are in your body come out, you know, through your skin or your ears or your nose and things like that. So I really appreciate both of you guys for being on. It was wonderful to share experiences. Next week, what we're going to do is we're going to focus really, really deeply on the essence of what the return means, counteroffers, counter-stipulations, cross-outs, all these techniques that we're doing. And so we're going to close out now. I appreciate everybody that's listening. Thank you very much. Please do listen next week and continue to do so. We're going to have our blogs and everything running shortly, and we will be marketing and letting everyone know about that. So thanks again, Ben. I appreciate it. Corey, your thoughts have been spot on as usual. I appreciate that as well. And I look forward to talking about this next week.
Right on.
Thanks a lot, Jordan. Thanks, guys.